Welcome to another episode of Three Men and a War Game. I'm your host, Paul, and I have fallen down the Wild West Exodus hole and have played nothing but for about 4.5 weeks or so.
Hey, I'm Kevin, a.k.a. Chops. Spooky ghosts!
Hey, I'm Chris, a.k.a. Potter, and I don't know what the fuck that just was.
It'll all make sense soon.
Oh, man.
Oh, wow, we're starting off. That was amazing. Tonight, guys. That's the kind of shit I need in my life on a Wednesday.
And this is going to be a time-sensitive thing, so we should let the listeners know. We are recording this on Wednesday, June 27th, and
that's right.
That will be relevant when we start talking about
that's
what
right.
we're talking about.
Episodes of the TV shows in the 80s when, like, the kids got molested. This is a very special episode of Three Men in a War Game.
God! What? What is wrong with you?
God damn it, Paul. All right, so why don't you kick us off here, Paul, and just talk about your hobby progress over the last week or so. Just gonna try a hard transition out of child molestation.
Yeah, no kidding. So hobby wise, I've got some more painting done on some Wild West Exodus models. Not a whole lot. I'm not done with any of them yet, but it's been a slow progress. I've still been knee deep in reading some Brandon Sanderson books, so that's been taking up a lot of my painting time, which has been great. But the other thing I managed to do was there is a Journeyman League starting for War Machine here in a couple weeks over at the Gamers Armory in Cary, North Carolina, and I decided I'm going to play. And because of that, I picked up the Mark III Circle Battle Box and built those models, and they're on my desk at work going, paint me. So I have a scheme in mind, and we'll see what happens from there.
Very cool. I'm excited to hear about your journey back into Hordes, just because it's a system that I never picked up and I, you know, don't know a ton about, but it seems cool.
I mean, I honestly played a game, two games actually, last week. And it was my first games in 2 years. Basically, I played one game once Mark III dropped, and that was it. And it was the weirdest feeling because I truly understood the term. It's like riding a bike. You know, it just stuck automatically, and I knew what I was doing.
Good. And I mean, it's a great game system, right? Like, I'm not gonna pretend I don't know that it's not a good game system.
Yeah, I mean, Paul's trying to drag me into it, doing it with him, and my fear is War Machine and Hordes is my absolute favorite gaming system out there. I mean, I played super competitively when I lived in the DC area. You know, for those of you that play War Machine and Hordes, if you're familiar with the Advanced Maneuver guys, that's the group of people I hung out with. I'm very good friends with those guys. And, you know, we all played super, super competitively to the point where, like, every Saturday we're like, store opens at 11, we're there. Store closes at midnight, we're still there playing War Machine. And it's
That's
like
awesome.
It was one of those kind of things. And it's a fantastic system. And I am hoping that, you know, Paul is right, that it is the best that it's been, because I want the game to work. I've just am so jaded right now from the release of Mark III.
I think a lot of people are. I think that's fair. I think a lot of people jump ship for that reason. But yeah. I'm excited that you guys are getting back in, because, like, it's good for, you know, we want, like, the kind of guys we are, like, the hype men for the industry. We want good game systems to do well, you know, and companies should have the opportunity to be able to write their ships.
One of the things that I never stopped doing, even though it's been about 2 years since I played War Machine, I never stopped listening to the guys over at Chain Attack. So for that entire 2 years, I listened to every episode they put out. So I guess I still have my finger on the pulse a little bit. And I mean, everything that they say is that statistically, when you run all the numbers, the factions have never been closer together.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I've been starting to watch a little bit of some battle reports out there, and it definitely seeing that. I really wasn't sure about the whole, and again, this is getting off topic, but, you know, the CID format that they had, I wasn't sure about it, but now looking at it, I actually think it's a really good way for them to go, where they can focus on a faction at one time, get something out, move on to the next faction, instead of having to balance all of the factions every year at the same exact time. I mean, they have so many armies out now, that's just hard to do.
I do have a question about that, though. It just, you know, my analytical brain and what I do at work got me thinking, and I wonder how much of that faction balance is because the player base that's left is the elite player base, right? And since it's the guys that have stayed on and are playing the game a lot are the competitive high skill players, you know, they're more able to pilot lists at an equitable level than maybe before, where there were more scrubs in the field. How do you feel about that?
I don't know. I mean, I think the new theme list that they're doing is helping design lists a little bit better in this way. I think it's tailoring things a bit better. So, like, you know, I'm a Signar guy, so like if I want to take Striker, I already know that I'm going to take the Stormblade theme list. I'm not going to take any of the other theme lists. I want to take Siege. I'm going to take Gravediggers. I think it helps newer players really build a lot of these lists, and a lot of the competitive players to find out where they can tweak and figure out, okay, well, how many points do I need to do here so I can get that free bonus here? And it really helps keep that balance. I think where things were bad in the beginning is because for a long time, Signar was the only faction out there with that theme list.
Gotcha. And I wasn't trying to talk shit either, right? I was just trying to you know, pose the question that I think about.
No, I don't take it as you talking shit about it. I mean, because for me, I did. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I was jaded as fuck when Mark III came out. Like, and the thing is, as a Signar player, I should have been super happy because Signar came into Mark III very strong. You know, I went into did the launch tournament that was done in our local area. I had a ton of fun. You know, for the first time, I took Kara Sloan out and actually felt like I wasn't gimped. And she was she has been one of my absolute favorite casters in Signar since she released. I've loved her theme. I loved her look. I loved her spell list. I like how she played. I like that long range sniper feel. It was great. But you always felt like she was gimped. She wasn't very strong. Like, you couldn't take her. And like, coming out of the shoot in Mark III, boom, putting her on the table, and she's like wholesale slaughtering people, and it was amazing feeling. But at the same time, it's like the game was not balanced. Between the factions, it was so imbalanced at the time, and so coming out the shoot, it wasn't that good from a balance perspective. But right now, like, it looking at it just from battle reports and what I've seen, it looks strong, and I think it's the theme list that's really doing it for people. I don't think so much because of the high-end players there. I think it's really that Privateer has done a good job developing the balance around these theme lists.
That's awesome. It's encouraging to hear. Maybe someday I will take the plunge.
You know, and for me, one of the things that I have to admit is that initially I always hated the idea of theme lists. It just drove me nuts. I thought it was a bad bit of business on their part. Especially once you got into Mark III and you could suddenly get 20 extra points worth of solos to go along with your models. But as time has gone by, I've seen that it allows them to balance the game in different ways. Like, if you have a ridiculous combo in a faction, you just make sure that those models can't be in the same theme list, and it's taken out.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. Yeah, for sure.
And I think that was a lot of the balancing that Mark II did from Mark I, because I've been playing War Machine and Horde since Mark I. You know, for back when I started playing, like, Deathjack wasn't even a thing. And so, like, you know, back then when you took tournament lists, you could bring as many name solos in any amount of the list that you wanted to. So, like, I could bring two lists, and in both lists I've got Gorman DeWolf in them. But now, like, when they did that into, you know, going Mark I to Mark II, they took that away. Like, you couldn't take the same name characters in each of the same lists. You know, I think the same thing that they're doing now, you know, that this is the next evolution with these theme lists is that of what they did for Mark I and Mark II. This is the next evolution of it.
Very cool. I think with that, we probably can come back to War Machine in a future episode. I think we've probably got a lot to talk about, especially after you guys get a couple weeks into the Journeyman League.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to get back in.
Paul, any other hobby progress?
No, I mean, really, that's about it. You know, just getting those guys together and seeing what's up with that. Because the cool thing about the Mark III boxes is that they're new Warcasters too. So Tanith I can't even remember what her title is, but the Feral Song wasn't even in the game. So, and she's pretty interesting because I also played a bit of Crix, and she's got some Crix tech in there.
That's awesome. I mean, if there's one thing I can tell you, it's that Privateer Press makes dope minis, man. I love the aesthetic of both sides of that game. I think I like Hordes a little better, but they're both amazing looking.
I prefer the Beast
hands down. I love their minis.
Yeah, I just like the aesthetic, I think, of all the factions a little bit better in Hordes. But, I mean, that's not to say the War Machine factions aren't cool. Convergence is, like, super cool looking.
Yeah, especially if you like that Art Deco style. Convergence is great. But, yeah, I mean, for me, Hordes is where it's at, you know, both from a gameplay-wise as well as models. I actually prefer the Fury mechanic over the Focus mechanic.
I think one day I'm going to make you guys explain all that to me. Right now, though, we should... go back onto to hobby progress, and we'll cut it over to you, Chris. What have you been up to?
Building a ton of Wild West Exodus. I've got about 1,900 points of Wild West Exodus now, so you can definitely say that I've taken the plunge. I've built my Confederates. I built some more mercenaries and bandits for Jesse James. So I've been building that, and then also in the background, I've been prepping for Age of Sigmar 2.0 and getting some gold on my golden boys.
Yeah, motherfucker. Once you're over like that $150 mark, you're in, man, and you're up there now.
Oh, yeah. Well, I haven't. Luckily, I've only spent, I think, $48 on Wild West Exodus, thanks to our gracious host there owing me a ton of money and getting it in free minis.
Hey, that's pretty dope.
That's the way to do it.
So, all right. So, Chops, what you been up to, man?
So, as you guys know, I have a new mini human in the house, and my gaming time has been cut down a lot. But I found a way to have her in a rocker and paint, so I can rock her with my foot, and I can paint, and we spend some quality time, and Dad gets some hobby time in, even though I'm not necessarily gaming that much. And I've been assembling and painting stuff for Age of Sigmar like a friggin' madman, working on some Malifaux stuff in between, getting into a new faction in Malifaux and just putting some stuff together there. But mostly AOS, painting ghouls and painting ghoul kings and terror geists and crypt cores and all the stuff that goes with the flesh eater courts.
Gee, it sounds like you guys have been working on a lot of Age of Sigmar stuff, huh? Something going on?
You could say that.
You could say that, and this is where we get back to that June 27th thing. So Wednesday, June 27th, we are officially a couple days away from the official launch of AOS 2.0. I don't know. They don't really have a thing. It's just called Age of Sigmar, the new edition, right? But we'll just call it AOS 2. Just as the primer to go out there, it's very different than AOS, but also not very different. The core rules have been expanded. There's a lot of new stuff, but the soul of the game, I think, remains intact. Would you agree, Potter? I know you've been looking into it a lot.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I think the core of what the game was is still there. You know, going into it, you're going to be still very familiar with it. There's a lot of, you know, different rules tweaks, I think, that they've taken from, you know, the two previous editions of the General's Handbook and have pulled those in to make them more permanent rules in the gaming system as a whole, measurement from bases. That's a big change.
Yeah, I think the way to look at this, right, is like you could see like a Ford Taurus on the street, right? But then like the NASCAR thing with the Ford Taurus body on, it's a little different under the hood, right? Like,
yep.
There's a lot more stuff going on, and the fact that you can still use all of your war scrolls, I think, speaks volumes to the fact that the game is not fundamentally different, but also it is a brand new game.
Yeah, I mean, they're not changing any of the stats on any of the characters that I can see outside of, you know, maybe doing some small erratas here and there. But like, you know, I play Stormcast. My adjudicators, my liberators, they're still liberators. They're still adjudicators that do the exact same thing. Their stat lines haven't changed. You know, so I go from 2.0 in or 1.0 to 2.0. Nothing changes for me. All I'm getting is some upgraded rules for the core rules, and I'm getting some new minis. Like, that's
it. Yep, and the new rules will make a big difference. But before we dive in super deep and get into the hype about what we know so far, Paul, how much do you know? Where's your excitement level at right now on a scale of like 1 to Spinal Tap?
Mine is more along the lines of 1 at the moment, because here's the thing that's happened to me, right? As I said at the top of the show, Wild West Exodus has just sucked me in. I can't get enough of it. I can't get enough of battle reports. And let me tell you, there's not a whole lot of them on YouTube. I've been watching the same ones over and over again. That we need more of them. Like, I'm glad Mini Wargaming has picked up doing battle reports on it. The guys at
the Battle Hammer, they're pretty entertaining.
I've been watching these over and over again. I about cried the other day on the 22nd of June. They were supposed to do their next quarterly or monthly Q&A, and they had technical difficulties, so it hasn't come out yet. And I was just like, what am I going to do? I wanted to find out what was coming out next. So my brain and my entire existence has been consumed, absolutely consumed, by Wild West Exodus. So what that basically means is that I am aware that Age of Sigmar 2.0 is coming out. Actually, I believe the rules are out, but I don't know much about it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they are.
So what I'm going to ask is that you guys sell me on why I should be excited about it.
100%. So let's start with one of the most important parts, and one of the most important parts for me is that they're in the way of 40K, they are taking it away from a stagnant narrative game to a game that has a persistent narrative and things are happening and they're pushing the narrative forward. And the way that they're launching this new game is with a big event that's basically called the Soul Wars, and that ties into the two-player starter box that's coming out. And so this two-player starter box is essentially starting to fill out the brand new Death Army, which is the Nighthaunt, being some spooky ghosts that are very exciting to me, and I am mega pumped to put these guys under my airbrush. And then also a new sort of faction from the Stormcast Eternals, and it's basically those two fighting it off to start. And also in the world of AOS, Nagash is the big bad, right? And he's the god of death, and he's got this big divine plan. And from what I understand, from what I've read so far, is the Skaven fucked his plan up, and things have gone sideways. And what happened was that in following Nagash's plan, I don't know all the details because I haven't read the book yet, but it unleashes powerful magic through all the realms. And so now there are spells that get cast and they go completely out of control. And this is taking the place of what are called endless spells on the battlefield. So magic has miniatures, and these miniatures can tear ass across the battlefield and cause havoc on both sides.
Dude, these new spells are legit. I watched Guerrilla War Games one, and they took four different of these, and they're called perpetual spells. And the thing is both people are going to be affected by this, whether it be positively or negatively. And man, these are some game changing spells. And the nice thing is you have to build them into the point cost of your army. So like, you just don't get to just, I'm going to cast this uber fucking thing and there's like no recourse for it. No, you have to pay for it. You have to build it into it, which is nice for a balance factor.
Yeah, and not only do you have to pay for it, the person who goes first, the person who goes at the top of any round gets to move an endless spell if that endless spell is what's called predatory, meaning it can move. So yep. You have to be really careful because, you know, poor placement of something like a purple sun can mean that thing is coming back and eating your troops.
Or the scythe that just goes through and just does like, what, 5 mortal wounds to anyone it walks through?
Yeah, it's bad news, but also awesome.
Yeah, that thing is.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to, just because for my sensibilities and the aesthetic I like, the grave wave or whatever it is. It's just like a tidal wave of dead bodies. Looks amazing.
Let me ask you a quick question. Are these spells, you know, like once they're cast, it doesn't matter? You can't necessarily control it. It's kind of random. Is that what I'm hearing?
It depends on what it is.
Yeah, yeah. There's a couple different kinds. There are predatory ones, and then there are ones that just stick around. But the predatory spells, the way that they work is the caster who casts the spell obviously gets to move it first. But after the first round, and obviously after the round in which a predatory spell is cast, you roll off just like you do currently, right, to see who goes first in the next turn. And if you go first, like, if you win the roll, you could actually opt to go second, because only the person who goes first in a battle round controls where these spells move on the battlefield. And it, like, sort of incentivizes the double turn.
Okay. So, well, that's a good way to de-incentivize it, for sure.
But then there's also things out there, like the celestial mirrors that you can take that will, you throw them out there, and you get to use them. You know, because you're putting it right next to you, but at the same time, your opponent can use the mirror as well too.
Yeah, and so how the mirrors work is you cast a spell at the mirror, and then it's basically the mirror is the origination point of the spell on the other side of the field. So
it's bouncing off of it.
Yeah, yeah, very cool. Yep.
Yep. So I mean, these new perpetual spells are going to add a whole, you know, extra layer to the game and what you're doing with spell casting. And the nice thing is that this is the first time I've ever seen a miniatures company that has made it to where, like, you get to manifest these spells on the tabletop. And I know we've talked about it in, you know, a couple of podcasts back when we were just briefly mentioning, you know, the Age of Sigmar coming out with the new edition and stuff. But, like, getting to see it now on these battle reports that a lot of these YouTubers are coming out with, like, it's going to be so awesome to just see there and just like you said, the purple horror, this big fucking ball of spikes and is just going to chase you and kill you. Like, no other game is doing that, and it adds this level of like fantasy element to the game that makes it just much feel that much more what's the word I'm looking for, sincere.
Cinematic.
Yeah, it's uber thematic. Like, that's what I'm seeing right now. Is, you know, as much as I'm liking like Star Wars Legion, like, because I love Legion right now because of how freaking thematic that game is. Like, everything that you see in the movies is what you're actually doing in the game. Like, and I feel like these spells are going to add that sense of thematic to the game at that level with spell casting, because it's always been a very boring thing. It's like, oh cool, I'm going to try it, roll your dice, all right cool, it goes off, now this is happening to you. Like, now that it's on the table and there's repercussions for it, it's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's just a little bit of, like, extra oomph, right?
So, have you seen at all, like, what the points cost on these things are?
From what I've seen, they're, like, in the 40 to 80 point range. So, they're, like, a thing that you fill your army out, and then you're like, oh, right, now I can grab an endless spell instead of, like, you know, not being able to spend the rest of these points.
So, like, you need, I'm assuming you need some type of wizarding level or something special to be able to cast it?
You just need a spellcaster, yeah.
A spellcaster, yeah. And it also, certain armies will be able to take certain ones, and that's going to all be in the General's Handbook, so okay. We haven't really seen that, right? Other than what we know from watching battle reports online. But they're really cool, and the other cool thing that I really admire is that they're putting it all out in one box, right? So you just buy the Malign Sorcery box. The Malign Sorcery box comes with a book on – it's sort of like a battle tome for Malign Sorcery. And then it also comes with all the models that you need. And it's $5 or $10 less than a Start Collecting box, and it's like 18 miniatures in the box.
Yeah, the cool thing is the tome that's coming into it also has scenarios in it. And if you play those certain scenarios, whatever persistent spell that you take in it could potentially have an increased bonus or negative depending on the map that you take or the scenario you play, because you're playing in a certain realm, and that magic may be stronger in that realm or that magic may be weaker in that realm. So that's actually adding another cool thing to it as well.
Yep, and so let's just segue right into that, Paul. So another cool thing about this game is when you're setting up the game, one of the decisions you make while you're setting the game up now is which realm, which mortal realm you're actually going to be fighting in. So, like, as in, are you going to be in Shai'ish, like the realm of death, right? Or I think Azure is the only one you can't, because that's the realm of heaven. That's where Sigmar is, and that one's locked off. But there's like Akshi, the realm of fire, and Gur, the realm of beasts.
And those are the ones I can remember. Life and stuff like that.
The realm of life, yeah, and metal, shadow, and Those are the only, and light maybe are the ones I can think of. But
yeah, basically it was every type of magic that used to be in old world fantasy got a realm.
Its own realm, yep. And then depending on which realm you're in, every realm is going to have an effect that it has. So one of the ones that I know for a fact is that Akshi, the realm of fire, when you're there, all wizards know a fireball spell. So every wizard gets access to a spell that they only get access to if you're fighting in Akshi. So that can like very much change the strategy of the game, right? Like how the game plays out just because of the realm you choose to fight in.
I like that idea. That seems really thematic. And that could make
if you think about it,
for terrain people, it's amazing, right?
Yeah, well, right, yeah, because you can build these big themed battlefields. And to think about it, like, from all manners of play, like, a narrative play, it's fantastic. And, like, I'm thinking about it for match play in terms of, like, tournaments. You could design a tournament around, like, something in Shai-ish, right? Or, like, the realm gate between Shai-ish and Akshi. If such a thing exists, or you say that exists, right? And so some of the tournament happens on one side and some of it happens on the other. So people are building their lists around those two realms they're going to be fighting in. I just think the way that TOs and the way that players are going to be able to use these realms is super cool.
Yeah. I think you're right on that.
Yeah. It's adding that narrative play into the match play, which is definitely cool, and it adds that extra element, because then you don't even know. You could walk into the and not even know what you're being run into, and maybe the list you built might not do so well because you're playing on this realm now. The other cool thing about the start collecting box, or not the start collect, but the two player battle boxes coming out for Soul Wars, aka 2.0, is the chamber that you're getting for Sigmar. We are finally, Stormcast are getting spellcasters for the first time in the edition. We're getting spellcasters, so we can finally go, hey, we could do something now when they're casting spells at us, because we haven't been able to do anything at all. We're finally getting it, so I'm super hyped for that.
For sure. And then, so Paul, you've played quite a bit of 8th edition 40K, right?
Yeah.
So given your experience with 40K, how do you feel about command points?
Oh, I think they're one of the best things to happen. I mean, we talked last time real quick about how resource management makes a game at this point. So having them in 40K kind of brings it up to modern times, instead of just rolling piles of dice.
All right, so how command points work in AOS is it's going to be a little bit different. So back in 40K, as you know, you get them for taking certain types of detachments, and the types of detachments that you take give you a certain amount of command points. And what that creates in 40K is a scenario where some armies are going to have access to a lot more command points than others just because of the formations that it can take, right? So like Dark Elder or Guard can get 15 command points pretty easily, but armies like the Custodes or the Grey Knights struggle to get 9, right?
Right, and even Necrons, which I play, struggle to get command points because you want maximum size units to take advantage of the we'll be back.
Right, so that and that is expensive, right? And then there you can't fit as many troops in because each of your troop choices is really expensive.
Correct.
Yep. So the way that it works in AOS is that every player gets one command point every turn, just flat out. That always works. So you're going to get 5 in a 5-round game. You're at the beginning of your turn, you get a command point. That's just how it works.
Okay.
So you also have access to other command points. So you can spend 50 points per command point that you'd like out of your army points to get more command points. And you can also get one command point per War Scroll battalion that you take. So what that functionally does is it puts every army on an even playing field with regards to the amount of command points they can bring into the game. And I think that is, on the whole, an entirely better system than what 40K uses.
So you get one basically for showing up each turn, right?
Yep.
And you can build them into your list as well, essentially?
Yes, 50 points per.
Yep.
That's interesting. And then you get one per...
per War Scroll Battalion. And if you think about it, if like the cheapest War Scroll Battalion for me is like 90 points, right? So now when I take that 90 points, it's not just getting me the bonus for the War Scroll Battalion, it's also getting me the command point.
Right. See, I forgot that unlike 40K, you have to pay for your War Scroll Battalions in Sigmar.
That's correct.
Yep.
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 Which makes sense. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And it's very cool. I think that it's an altogether superior command point system. And then the command points are going to be used for a lot of the same things, right? Rerolling. So you can use them to reroll charges, which is huge. And there's, you know, other basic rerolls you can use them for. But also, they're going to be used for things like summoning. So when you want to summon, like with Nagash, for example, when you actually summon the unit on, the summoning takes a command point to do it. So
right.
Where summoning is now free, so what I mean by that is you don't have to pay for your summoned units in reserve points like you did in AOS 1. It does cost you your command points.
Okay.
So not only are the unit, you know, the armies who have summonables, like I think a lot of people were like, free summoning, how is that balanced? And the way it's balanced is you can't spend your command points on other things. Also, other armies are going to be getting cheaper, like non-summoning armies are getting points cost reductions across the board to take more stuff. Mm-hmm. And they'll have access to more command abilities that they can use their command points for. So basically, you know, you're just basically trading away the ability to summon for just more powerful shit in general.
Yep. And the nice thing is too, so with the command points segueing into how the overall command your hero phase is going to change. So before, where only your general or other commanders that had abilities that said even you can use this command ability even if it's not the model's not the general, that whole thing is now gone. Every model that now has a command ability can now use their command abilities in the game, and now they've even tweaked them a little bit more to make them a little bit more dynamic. That like, so Stormcast are getting a new named character, and she's got three different command abilities. But it's one command ability, but it's broken up into three segments, and you have to choose how you're going to use it. You either use it in the hero phase, the shooting phase, or the combat phase, and it changes each way. To use these abilities now outside of the hero phase, you have to use command points to utilize these new abilities. So it gives now to where all these other heroes that you had in the game, they're like, cool, they're there, but I never get to use this section of their war scroll. You can now use it in the game, and which to me is a much better use of a rule set. You know, it's always boring when you've got something on the table and you can't take advantage of the whole thing. Now they've changed it up. You can do it now. So for me, it makes characters so much more important in Age of Sigmar 2.0.
Yeah, you're getting back to Hero Hammer, right? And to go with it, it basically the way that it'll work is that all the command abilities require a command point, right? It's in the way that it's written in the rules is in order to use any command ability, you must spend one command point. And that's what's going to balance people from just taking like all the heroes, but like you still have to, you know, use them effectively. And then your three generic, so everybody's going to have the at the double, which is you can use this command ability right after you make a run for a friendly unit within 6 inches of the hero. If you do so, that run roll is treated as being a six. Holy shit, you guys! Yeah, whoa. Automatic synthesis of movement. That's amazing, right? So good. Forward to victory is the one that lets you allows you to re-roll charges, and then inspiring presence, which is you're immune to battle shock.
Oh wow.
Yep,
that seems pretty good.
Yeah, but again, they require the command points, right? So it's that resource management, that clever use. And that's, like I said, where the summoners, you know, the thing that they're limited by is when they want to summon, they're basically giving up their ability to use those unless they pay for a lot of extra CPs.
Makes sense. Yep.
So, yeah. Yep.
And then also now, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say there, so GW is actually thinking about some balance here instead.
Yeah. You have to think about the risk reward, right? Cause you're thinking, well, 50 points, that's gotta be cheaper than my unit of guys. And sure. Right. But that also means that the risk that you're taking is that you're bringing less stuff onto the battlefield to start. And if you get if the first turn doesn't go to you, you might get aced right before you even have a chance to summon any of those units onto the table. You might just get wrecked. So there's some risk reward there as well, too. Hmm.
So another thing that they're doing with the spell casting in general, they're increasing the range of dispelling in this edition. So like where it was before, like where you had to be, I think it was like 12 inches or something, like now where you had to dispel something, now it's 30 inches, which will completely change the game.
Yeah, it was 18 before, and it's going to 30 now, right? Which is a huge change. It's basically all the way across the map.
Right. And again, I think it's looking at, again, looking at that balance. GW being that they're interacting with the tournament scenarios, or the circuits, the venues, they're going to them, they're looking at them, they're evaluating them, and they're seeing armies like Tzeentch sit in the back and just go spell, and they're nowhere even anywhere near being able to get dispelled. So helping bring that balance in is like, all right, cool, we'll increase it to 30 inches so they can't just sit back there, turtle, summon all these freaking demons out of nowhere, and oh, by the way, cast all these ton of spells and then just overwhelm their opponent on, you know, turn two.
Yeah, and now we'll talk about the other thing that's reigning in armies like Tzeentch, and this is maybe my favorite change. I feel like it's a small change, and it's not one of the ones that I've heard a lot of people talking about, but it's my favorite change, and that is that you can no longer shoot out of combat. So if your ranged guys are engaged, they can't shoot at anything more than 3 inches away from them. So basically they can still shoot, but they can only shoot the unit that they're engaged with. They can't just like snipe your heroes, even though your dudes are right in their face. And as a player who plays a primarily melee focused army, this is a very good change.
Yep. Another thing in the realm of shooting, they've added in lookout sirs for your heroes. So instead of your heroes being able to be targeted, they can, if you've got little fud-fuds next spot nearby, that one of those dudes can jump in the way and take that arrow for your hero.
Yep.
Little what?
Fud-fuds.
I've never heard that before.
They're red shirts. Red shirts, man.
Little fud-fuds. Aww. Poor little fud-fuds.
So, I mean, so for me, for that rule, I'm not sure how I like it, actually. I think I would have preferred something like a Warhammer 40K, where they just done, you know, if you're not the closest target model with over X amount of wounds.
Oh, man. Yeah, I feel like they've just been burned so hard on that, and there's, like, so much controversy around that, those targeting rules. I'm kind of okay with the way that they handled it here. I see what you're saying, but, like, I guess I just fall on the other side of it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, to me, the only thing is that, for me, they've done such a good job of streamlining the game and making so much more quickly. There's, you know, fewer and fewer dice checks and things that you have to do. Now they just added one in because of it. And I understand there is a lot of controversy revolved around it. I know with the current ruling that they just did with the FAQ with 40K, for the how they changed everything with the line of sight rules and everything else like that. I think GW is going in the right direction, but I think they may have been able to they could have probably worked on it a little bit more here in Sigmar. I think they had an opportunity they missed.
Well, that's fair. I think that's a fair criticism. So Paul, so we've been talking a little bit. Where are you at now?
As far as my excitement level, it's growing. It's growing.
Growing. All right. So let me now drop into the realm of wild speculation.
Okay. I like wild speculation.
All right, so if you look back at the battle tomes that have been released over the last 6 months, so I'm talking about the last three specifically, so the Maggotkin of Nurgle, the Daughters of Cain, and the Eidoneth Deepkin.
Yes.
If you look at those three battle tomes and you look at the AOS logo on those three battle tomes, it is the AOS 2.0 logo. And also, there was a lot of confusion about a lot of the wording in those battle right. tomes that is only now starting to make sense, because those were in effect the first battle tomes for the new edition. We just didn't know it entirely at the time, right? Like, we kind of knew it, but we didn't.
And that's true, because I have the Maggotkin one, and one of the things in there is that there are rules for summoning that made no sense in Age of Sigmar 1.0, because there are rules for summoning where you are earning a resource throughout the game that you can then use to summon.
Yep, and so if you look at those summons are command abilities. So now you feel me? So now you use those command abilities with a command point and spend those resources, and that's how you summon.
Right, that's pretty cool. So you're pretty cool. You're building up multiple resources there.
Yeah, and now hear me out here in that what I'm thinking and my wild speculation, and this is also one other piece of information is that aside from the Malign Sorcery Box, GW this week announced that there will be endless spells that are faction specific. And so the Nighthaunt and the Stormcast both have faction specific endless spells. And I think what that very clearly hints at to me is that pretty much every faction in AOS, my guess is over the next 18 to 24 months, is going to get a minor facelift in the form of a new battle tome, some new endless spells, and possibly maybe a new hero or model kit, right?
Well, yeah, they've already shown Nighthaunt and Stormcast's new battle tome. So both of them are getting brand new battle tomes.
Well, Nighthaunt never had one, right? But yeah, it's a fourth battle tome for Stormcast.
It's going to be a fourth one for us. But Nighthaunt were in the Death,
the Legions of Nagash, and the Grand Alliance Death, right?
Yeah, they were in Grand Alliance Death. That's where they were at.
But I mean, even still, that's not. Yeah, it barely counts, right?
I agree. So yeah, but they're getting theirs, and I agree with you. I definitely would say that what I'm hoping is now that they've got it balanced, they've got all these factions out. Like, I'm hoping we'll start see some, you know, new Lizardmen models. And they've also brought all the old factions back. Like all your, like from a character standpoint, all your old school characters that are from Fantasy Old World are now actual characters in the game instead of being like generic, like dwarf hero. It's now, you know, Thorgrim Grudgebearer again. Like they're back, which I think is a great move on GW's standpoint.
And just to add to the Seraphon love here, they released a little story where there was like a skink running around some like breeding pits and some jungly stuff inside of one of the flying ziggurats. And can you imagine, Paul, some like endless spells that have jungly Aztec themes?
Yeah, that would be pretty badass.
Eh?
Yeah, God, what are they going to do for Nurgle though? Like, is it just going to be?
Well, Nurgle's probably not going to get anything. They just got a whole new thing.
I think honestly, you're going to want to go back and look at that Maggotkin of Nurgle, through the lens of the General's Handbook 2018 and 2.0 AOS exactly, because that's going to be an entirely different book with new context.
Right.
It's like your second watch of Westworld. You know what I'm saying? It's super different the second time through.
And I couldn't even get through the first time.
Damn it, Paul.
Yeah, so what I'm hoping to see is like savage orcs get like just a giant fucking foot for the foot of Mork or Gork. That I just want to see just a big green foot on the field.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what they get, man. What's coming in the future. And I think we've pretty much hit you on all of the major hype points. So maybe just do you have any interest at all in either the new Sacrosanct Chamber of the Stormcast Eternals or the Spooky Ghosts?
No, I'm not. You know, here's the thing that's kind of bugging me a little bit. Is that to me, fantasy was always, you know, old school Warhammer fantasy battles was always the escape from the world of Space Marine love, right? Where you could actually get an entire game and there wasn't anything that was as loved and as overly kitted out as the Space Marines. And I feel like the Sigmarines at this point are kind of going down that path, and it's kind of frustrating me a little bit, but maybe that's because Seraphon haven't really gotten anything, and I kind of started digging into the Maggotkin after that book had already come out. So it could just be bad timing on my part, but I'm not sure yet. I haven't decided, but I'm a little bummed that Sigmar is getting all the stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying on that, but unfortunately, I mean, GW has always been the byproduct of their golden boars are, whatever their flagship is for that gaming system. And, you know, for 40K was always the Space Marines, and now it's, you know, Stormcast. Those are the people that are you know, for a long time, Korn was getting that love too. When Age of Sigmar first came out, I mean, yeah, Stormcast was getting a lot, but also Kord Bloodbound got a ton right there at the beginning of that as well too. So, I mean, I get what you're saying. You know,
yep,
it is what it is.
And think about it like 40K too, Paul. Like with 40K, you had that big initial Primaris rush. And since then, it's been fucking crickets, man. Like a couple upgrade packs, a codex, you know, whatever the fuck the Adeptus Custodes launch was. And I love those guys, man. I have like $200 worth of them. But like it was like two model kits and stuff. And they haven't been as kitted out since. And GW's been really good about focusing on those other factions. So I think it's worth being a little cautiously optimistic about the not everything Stormcast Eternals all day for the next 18 months or so.
Yeah, I mean, I also think this will probably be the last we'll see of Stormcast for a little bit. I mean, I think this is just bringing in that balance to allow them to have their spellcasters because of the way that they're moving 2.0 with the, you know, the perpetual spells and stuff like that. Like, they have zero way of casting spells. I mean, so I think we're also going to see maybe something for the Caradhron Overlords. I do know that GW has hinted and talked about the revamping the Caradhrons over, especially with, you know, they're the only people that have troop transports in the game. So, like, they're going to be looking at that and changing that a little bit when Caradhron get their new book. So, hopefully, they'll get something that'll allow them to use those spells as well, too. So, but I don't know what they're going to do because dwarves are a very anti-magic kind of race. But I don't think you'll see anything much more Stormcast outside of small releases for new events that they're going on with the perpetuating the storyline from this point forward. I think they're kind of done as an army at this point.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Okay, well, that would be good. That would allay some of those that concern that I have that it's going to be the Sigmar show, you know.
Well, I think it's going to be the Order show. It's always going to be the Order show. Grand Alliance Order is always going to have the most love. But I think that the Sigmarite stuff is going to be just this initial push.
Okay.
And yeah, so fucking A, man. Saturday, I'm going to be putting stuff together. I'm going to be airbrushing like a madman. I bought a bunch of paint. I'm ready to get ghosty.
Yeah, I'm jealous. I've got my stuff pre-ordered, but I won't be able to pick it up till Monday because I'm heading out of town this weekend to take my kids to the grandparents for the summer. So I'm
nice.
I'll have to wait.
Yeah, I got the. I'm getting the Soul Wars box. I'm getting the General's Handbook. I got Malign Sorcery. I got one box of the Banshees, and also the Terrain Dice, just because I think those are pretty slick. So I definitely opted in for some of those. And then the following week, I think I'm going to pick up the War Scroll cards, and also the Mortarch of Grief, and that'll probably cover me for a little while.
That Mortarch is awesome.
Yeah, and it's only $45. Oh,
wait,
my
that
God.
Big ass thing that you sent us a picture of the other day is only $45?
Yes, sir.
What?
Yeah, it's a $45 model.
No, that's
which,
not.
I mean, you think about it. It is, dude. I swear to God. The prices, the pre-orders went up, or you'll be able to pre-order on Saturday. Prices went up. It's $45 US, man.
Holy crap. Okay, well, I mean, the picture of it made it look huge. It mustn't be as big as I'm thinking it is.
It's the size. Have you seen an Akelian King, the Ideneth Deepkin model?
No.
It's like the dude riding the seahorse or whatever it is that he's riding. I'm thinking it's about the same size as that model, okay. Which is, I mean, a medium sized model. We're not talking about a Marathi sized model or a Great Unclean one. It's like in between. That size, like a dreadnought size model.
Okay.
No, it cannot.
Or at least, I mean, a little bigger than that, right? Because I mean, it's not it's not one of the massive ones, a behemoth. Because the behemoths are going to be the black coach, and then there's one other dude that's going to be the behemoth. And oh god, that black coach, my wallet. I don't know what my financial situation is going to be like when that thing launches, but it doesn't matter.
Well, that's like your favorite model. I mean.
That was my first model I ever painted. Yep, I needs it.
Yeah, I think that sounds like a good plan.
Which one are you getting, Chops?
The Mortarch of Grief.
That's the female one, right?
No,
that's
correct. Yep, it is.
Lady
old whatever. Yep.
She's only $35.
$45.
That's $45?
Yeah, man. It looks like one of the $90 models. I know it does, because when I first saw it, I was like, "Well, there goes $100." But it's a $45 model.
Yeah, and I guarantee my two new characters are going to be expensive as shit.
We'll see. The one on that, like, freaking hippogriff thing is amazing.
Which one? The one with the wings, or the one?
Yeah, the one with the wings. Yeah,
it's not a hip. It's like a lizard thing. I don't. Dude, he's amazing.
It's so weird. Whatever. I don't know what that creature is, but it is so weird.
It's called. I'm looking at its war scroll right now. I can't even pronounce it. I'm not gonna try.
And for the listeners, you can go look it up. But the thing has like angelic wings, a horse body, some kind of like weird teeth, and like horns like a ram. It's the weirdest.
I don't know what it is, but it's cool looking.
It is rad, and the dude riding it is rad, and the base is rad. The whole thing is really cool.
Oh man! All right, so it might not be always and forever Sigmar. But what about everybody else? What's changing for other armies? I mean, you said that war scrolls are staying the same, right?
Yep.
I mean, yeah, I would say 90% of the war scrolls are probably going to stay the same. You'll probably see a 10% of from tweaking to balance things to make things a little bit more up to par with the other things that are, you know, slightly less used models. You know, they're going to get probably a tweak here or there.
And I think it's actually all points costs there. And then the ability to use their command abilities, even if they're not the general, right? Like that's going to bring a lot of old models out. Yep. And I think the general's handbook is going to tell us a lot more, Paul. I think we have to wait, and we're going to do it. We're going to do a post show, right? Where we just go a deeper dive into all the mechanics after I've got a couple games in the new system. Yeah, I've played plenty of AOS 1, but not, you know, obviously any games yet of AOS 2. So once I get my head around it and I've fully digested that general's handbook to let you know, like, what I think is, you know, especially because I do have some iron jaws laying around, right? And I'm kind of looking forward to seeing how those iron jaws are going to change, and also how the flesh eater courts are going to change. So I'll be able to, I think, tell you a lot more once I've gotten into the GHB.
Yeah, because right now, and all the YouTubers, they are telling us that they are using the general's handbooks for the points cost, but they cannot divulge the point cost on their videos right now. So or they risk not being able to do any advanced copies from GW again. So we're not seeing any points right now, but we're definitely seeing that there are stuff that is in the general's handbook right now that just models don't exist for right now. They have confirmed that.
Yeah, so that's actually kind of exciting.
So there you
I'm
go.
I'm excited. I'm coming around on this.
Yeah. Yes. So maybe a general's handbook, maybe a rule book, or in your future.
Well, definitely the general's handbook. I'm not sure about the rule book. So why would, if I can just go and download the rules, why would I buy the rule book?
Let me tell you, Paul, did you like the 40K rule book?
I don't own it.
He doesn't own it. He uses mine.
Oh.
So, Paul, you'll get, just like the big book for 40K, you'll get all the scenarios that are in it.
Battle plans, yep.
Battle plans. You'll get all the lore in it. Yep. And I will say GW is doing a lot better with Age of Sigmar 2.0 of starting to flesh out more of the world right now. Like before, yeah. It's like, okay, we have all these different mortal worlds and all these lands, and this is it. All right, cool. That's about all we knew. Now they're starting to flesh out like what they are, what they're for, why they're there, how you
what they look them. Like.
Yeah, the map of the all the different mortal realms, like where they are in the celestial heavens, like all sorts
maps
of
maps of the realms.
Yeah, they're doing a lot better and breaking that out, and a lot of that, I guess, I guarantee will be in the new rule book. So I mean, for that is painting, lore, scenarios, though, those are going to probably be your big things out of it.
Yes. Yeah. The way that I read it is the first 220 or so pages are lore, maps, all that world building stuff, which is huge for me. That's my shit. I love it and I need it and I want it. I'm going to just like inhale it, right? I'm going to read it and love it. But after that, you've got your core rules. So 18 pages of core rules. And then beyond that, you've got your narrative play stuff, match play stuff. There's some siege rules that are in there. So like epic scale sort of, or not epic scale, but like Armageddon scale size, like for AOS. So with siege rules and like bunkering and stuff like that. And then
so like apocalypse.
That's what I meant. Yep. Yep. And then also, Triumph and Treachery rules will also be in the core book.
So all that's basically moving from last year's general handbook to the core book.
Correct. Well, so the full suite of battle plans this is of course the like GW knows how to make that money, man. They know how to pull that money out. So a third of the battle plans are in the core rule book. A third of the battle plans are in the Malign Sorcery book, and then the final third of the battle plans are in the general's handbook.
Of course.
Remember, yeah. they don't make a lot of their money off the miniatures. They make it off the books.
The books, and they're a profit driven company, right? That's where those Black Library books and those rule books, man, they'll get you. You don't have to buy all of them. I wouldn't say, but you're going to want the General's Handbook almost certainly. I think that's the
That was the one that I was planning on picking up.
Well, I mean, I think between you and me, I think we'll have them all pretty much covered.
Yeah. Yeah, as long as Potter's getting Malign Sorcery and Soul Wars, you should be fine.
I mean, I'm definitely getting Soul Wars. Soul Wars is already purchased. I sold my Xbox to fund this shit, so I might actually have some money left over to buy the Malign Sorcery box.
There you go. And those extra sweet, sweet spells for the Stormcast.
Yep. I am just excited to see... because the funny thing is like when I played fantasy, I played Khorne, they don't do spellcasting, and I played dwarves, they don't do spellcasting. So my entire fantasy career, I have always played factions that did not do spellcasting.
Don't cast magic.
Even in 40K, I played Black Templar, no psychers.
Well, so, now's like, your chance, man. You're going to get your magic cast in gold, boys.
Oh, dude. I will always have at least one, if not two, spellcasters. We're actually getting a spellcaster unit.
Hero. Yeah, and unit.
Well,
yep.
Yeah, we're getting a hero. We're getting a hero in the book, in the Soul Wars box. We're getting a named hero. And then both of the two new heroes that they announced Grand Magic, Aventus Firestrike. And Asteria Soulbright, both of those are spellcasters.
There you go.
We're getting three named character spellcasters. Then we're getting just a normal everyday spellcaster that's not just a hero, but it's not a named. And then yeah, we're getting a spellcaster unit.
Wizards, man, it's time for it's time for the Stormcast to get some magic on.
Yeah, no, I'm super excited. And the cool thing, like they've already started writing the fluff for these guys. Like, so Asteria Soulbright, her fluff is really cool because she is basically dead set on trying to figure out how to solve the problem of the Stormcast Eternals starting to slowly but surely lose their souls,
lose their minds.
Yeah. every time you know they get reforged, their little bit of themselves are taken away and they're chipped away. She is dead set on trying to figure out how to do that. So like she's even going so far in like interacting with the vampires and all these other immortal beings to figure out how they're staying alive and keeping their sanity. Huh. Yeah, it's some cool. And like the other guy, like he's super anti Khorne. Like he just wants every time he sees Khorne, he's just got he was on a vengeful rampage and just he goes after Khorne. Like that's his thing is Khorne must die. So I mean, it's kind of cool. They've already started writing these fluff for these characters and putting them out. So. I am super excited from a lore standpoint, which is why I'm getting the big book.
And there you go, Paul. I think that's as far as we're going to get tonight.
Those are good reasons. Yeah, I like that. So the next time we come back to Age of Sigmar, hopefully all this stuff will be out and we'll have had time to go through it and talk about it in more depth.
Yep, and listeners, follow the Twitter, because I'm going to be feeding Paul pictures to post on the Twitter account all weekend.
Oh, yeah, so
of his spooky ghosts.
I'll be doing it next week with all my new Stormcast. So, and then hopefully next week we'll be able to get out, Paul, and you bring your Maggot Kin out, and we can try everything out and see what you think.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Because you haven't got to take your Maggot Kin out yet since you've gotten them, have you?
I have not. I still have stuff to build.
Well, ooh, get on it.
I know what you're doing this weekend.
I got a bunch of the little fly dudes to build, and just kind of. But the nice thing about those things is that I can use them in 40K as well.
Yep.
And you got it.
So that's actually exciting.
And you got a nice new 40K Nurgle army.
I know. That's the nice thing, is that it's both, and I can always play with my Snail Boy.
Aw, Snail Boy.
Yeah, that's the main thing. I just want to be able to use Snail Boy.
I love that miniature. It's so funny.
it's whimsical. And that's the whole thing about the whole Maggotkin, is that it's just all whimsical.
Yeah. I really liked how they've updated, Nurgle's lore to more than what it used to be back in the day. Now how more of it's like it's sing-songy and fun. Like, they're going out and purely enjoying what they're bringing to the people. I like it. It changed.
Yeah, I like that. The last time we were in the store together, Chris, one of the things we had talked about was the Tallymen and how they're functioning, right?
Yeah, I didn't even know. I thought those things were fake. Like, I thought that was just for like GW's little video thing that they made. I did not realize that those were legitimate models.
Yeah, and in theory, they're going around and keeping track of all the rest of the guys in the army and saying, hey, have you converted this person? Have you, passed on this pox? And, they're just keeping track of everybody and what they've done, which is pretty awesome.
Yep. No, GW is doing a good job, man. And one thing that they do better than they do miniatures is their lore. They build their worlds very well.
Indeed.
All right. Well, yeah, I guess that's about it, huh?
I think so.
All right. Well, follow us on Twitter at @3menInAWarGame. And if you're listening on the iTunes app, leave us a review. Follow us on Podbean. Subscribe. All that fun stuff.
Spooky ghosts.
Spooky ghosts. Ghosts.
Did you mean Meowschwitz?
Poor little Fud Fuds.